But we see that even though we look at this scroll, there's a bit of sad news. And the sad news is that there was no one worthy to open the scroll. John says, and I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice. I'm in verse 2 of Revelation 5. Who is worthy to open the scroll and to loose its seals?
Welcome to Encouraged in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author and your pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. This is Sonia Hall, thanking you for joining us for the conclusion of the tribulation. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of the tribulation.
You see people that are being martyred for being Christians. They are in the tribulation. So they don't look at the tribulation as a future 7-year period. They would say that the tribulation is the problems that we have right now. So, I think that's why it's important to look at the book of Revelation, because as we go through the book of Revelation, you know, we're going to see that these troubles that we have are nothing like what's going to be manifested on this earth. So, that would be, and you said they even got scriptures, John 16:33 and Romans 5:3-4, where it talks about tribulation, right? Tribulation worketh patience. But, it, you know, it's a different kind of tribulation. Again, that's why it's important to study the Bible, because you got to study the Bible in context. You know, if you take it out of context, then you can say stuff like this. Well, we're in the tribulation right now. And there are some great Bible teachers that I highly respect that say that we are in the tribulation right now, but that's not the case. All right. Then you got the preterist view, and the preterists basically believe that everything in the book of Revelation took place in the first century. So they would say that when these events, these seals and bowls and trumpet judgments, that they all took place in the first century. And it culminated, and we know this for a fact, that in 70 AD, the Emperor Titus came into Jerusalem and he destroyed Jerusalem. You know, he burned down the temple and knocked down the walls and destroyed the city. And so some people say, well, that was the tribulation right there. You know, again, would to God that was the tribulation, because that would have been, you know, kind of mild for most of the people, right? So we would believe, and again, I'm assuming that you are premillennial, that it's going to be a future 7-year period where the wrath of God will be unleashed on this earth. But it'll also be a time when, you know, the Antichrist and his program will be manifested on this earth. Now, I put this note here, and the note is that the tribulation spoken of in the book of Revelation could only fit a premillennial view. Because look what Jesus said in Matthew 24 and verse 21. Jesus said that this would be a period of time that would not, that such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, nor shall ever be. So how can, you know, the troubles of this world fit into what Jesus said? Jesus said when this tribulation comes, he said it's going to be a time that has never been experienced on this world. And and after it's over, there'll never be another time. You know, how could it be 70 AD when the Romans came in and destroyed Jerusalem? You know, again, that, you know, there's been worse things that have happened. Just think of the 10 million Jews that got killed, you know, during the Holocaust. You know, when in the first century, you know, it just basically said that the Romans destroyed the city and the Jews scattered. There's a big difference there between destroying a city and people scattering and then 10 million people being killed. So, you know, when you look at that, you know, that wasn't in comparison to some of the nefarious things that have taken place over the centuries. You know, the destruction of Jerusalem in the first century kind of wanes in comparison to some of those things. And so Jesus says that this tribulation period that's coming, he said it's going to be like a time that never was on this earth and nor ever shall be. So when you look at that, the troubles of this world and the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, it doesn't square with the words that Christ spoke here. So I'll just say this again. Some of the people who don't believe in a 7-year tribulation period are probably some of your good friends, right? You're good. Sometimes when I start naming religions, then I get in trouble. So I'm not going to name any religions this afternoon. And I'll tell you this, that, you know, probably a lot of them don't even know the doctrine of their denomination. Because if you ask some of them, you know, they don't know this stuff. But yet still, this is what their denomination believes. All right. So these are the views concerning the tribulation. All right. We looked at that. Now, what is the purpose of the tribulation? You know, if you got the notes, I gave you a detailed explanation of the purpose of the tribulation. All right. Detail. You know, and one of the things we read in Daniel 9 about Daniel's 70 weeks, and there's still 1 week that's unfulfilled. And so it's, and that's 7 years, and it's unfulfilled. And so during the tribulation, God will resume his dealings with Israel. Right now, who is God dealing with? God is dealing with the church, right? You know, if you look at the Old Testament up until the time that Christ came, who was God dealing with? He was dealing with Israel. You know, he gave Israel the law. He gave Israel the prophets. He gave Israel the feasts. He gave Israel the festivals, right? And it was all about Israel. Now, you know, there were Gentiles that, you know, were saved and things of that nature. So we know that, you know, that as Gentiles, you know, God dealt with us too. But what was who was the main people that he were dealing with? He was dealing with the Israelites, okay? When Christ came, somebody watch this. That when Christ came, he took his attention from Israel and he gave it to the church. And so now we are in the church age. And let me say this, because there's some false teachings going around that's saying that the church replaced Israel. No, the church didn't replace Israel. You know, God is still going to continue to deal with Israel. You know, there's many people that believe, well, since the church came, God is no longer dealing with Israel, and that the church took the place of Israel. No, the church didn't take the place of Israel. Okay, so I just want to make that clear. But now God is dealing with the church. And so when he's done dealing with the church, and that will be during the tribulation, he'll be done. He won't be dealing with the church anymore. He'll be dealing with Israel again. So the purpose of the tribulation is that God will resume his dealings with Israel. Now, you know, keep in mind, and we're going to look at some of this stuff, that, you know, he's going to ordain 144,000 Jewish evangelists, you know, to go out through all the earth. We're going to see the reemergence of, I believe, Elijah and Enoch, and they're going to come and they're going to be preaching. So God will resume his dealings with Israel, and he will bring salvation to them. So that will be the primary purpose as God deals with Israel. You know, he will be lining them up, you know, for salvation. Now, another purpose of the tribulation is to bring judgment upon unbelieving Gentiles. That, as Jesus said, there'll be a time on this earth like there never was before. And so the tribulation will be a time of judgment upon unbelieving Gentiles. And, you know, we're going to look at one where it says that they're going to be interested in getting away from God, right? I mean, getting away from God, that they're going to ask the rocks to fall on them and kill them because they don't want to. You know, instead of submitting to God, you know, they would rather be killed by the rocks. Okay, so the purpose of the tribulation is twofold. God resumes his dealings with Israel, and God will bring judgment upon the unbelieving Gentiles of this earth. All right. Now, and I gave this to you in your notes too, so you have this in your notes. I didn't put the scriptures here, but you have the scriptures in your notes. Now, as the church, we don't have to go through the tribulation. And I like what, and man, I just found out that, and I didn't notice that one of my mentors, Dr. Ed Heinsohn, went home to be with the Lord. I just found that out. I didn't know that. He went home to be with the Lord earlier in the summer. But I like my mentor, Dr. Ed Heinsohn. One of the things that he said is God didn't give these things to scare us. God gave these things to prepare us. My. I like that. I like that. Dr. Ed Heinsohn. You can pull up that quote by him. God didn't give us these things to scare us. God is saying to the church, don't be scarred, right? Don't be scarred, right? He didn't give us these things to scare us. He gave us these things to prepare us. So why do I believe? Now, there's a lot of people that will disagree with me. Okay, I'm letting you know that right now. There are a lot of people that will disagree. But I believe that there's overwhelming evidence to show that the church will not go through the tribulation. You know, some people believe that the church is going to go through part of the tribulation. Some people believe that it's going to go through all the tribulation. I believe that we're not going to go through any of it. And these are the reasons. Again, if you have the notes, I got the scriptures there in the notes. The church is not mentioned in Revelation 6 through 18. And that's where we see the tribulation. If you go back and read the book of Revelation in chapters 6 through 18, it talks about the tribulation. Now, it don't say one thing about the church. But now notice, in the first chapters, let me just read this to you for a second, right? In chapter 2, verse 1, unto the angel of the church of Ephesus, Revelation 2, 8, and unto the angel of the church of Smyrna, Revelation 2, 12, and unto the angel of the church of Pergamum, Revelation 2, 18, and unto the angel of the church of Thyatira, Revelation 3, verse 1, unto the angel of the church of Sardis, and Revelation 3, 7, unto the angel of the church of Philadelphia, Revelation 3, 14, unto the angel of the church of Laodicea. So we see that what's in the first couple chapters of Revelation, right? He's talking about the church. But in Revelation 6 through 18, you don't hear anything about the church, which is the great tribulation. Now notice in chapter 19, it says, verse 7, let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him, for the marriage of the Lamb is come, and his wife have made herself ready. Who is the wife? Who is the bride? The church. So he starts talking about the church again in Revelation 19. But he didn't say a thing about it in chapter 6 through 18. So that leads me to believe that the church will not go through the tribulation. God has not appointed the church to wrath, right? I was looking for something to make sure. Okay, I'm gonna cover this in a second. So the church has not been appointed to wrath. And what is, oh man, what is the tribulation? It's the wrath of the Lord and the wrath of the Lamb. That is the tribulation. It's the wrath of the Lord, and it's the wrath of the Lamb. The church is delivered from the hour of tribulation. We read that in the scriptures. The church is coming back with Jesus. We'll be in heaven with Jesus during the tribulation. In Revelation 19, let me go back to it again. All right, now this is at the end of the tribulation, right? Notice here, and I saw heaven open, Revelation 19, 11. And I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him was called faithful and true, and in righteousness he does judge and make war. And then, you know, it goes on, and he was clothed with a vesture dipped in blood, and his name is the Word of God. Look at this. Look at this. And the armies that were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. Who is that? That's the church. Notice, we will ride white horses. We are clothed in fine linen, and it's white and clean. That's the dress of the saints, right? So we're coming back with Jesus. Now notice also how many people go to war dressed in white. I guarantee you that you're not going to see any armies dressed in white. They're going to have that camouflage, or they're going to have some other kind of color. Notice this army is dressed in white and clean. Why is that? Because we don't have to do any fighting, right? Jesus is going to do all the fighting. You know, what's that song say? He gives me all my prescriptions. Come on in the room. He gives me all my prescriptions. He heals all my diseases. And what's the other thing? He fights all my battles. He fights all my battles. So we're coming back with Jesus. And so we're not going to be here during the tribulation. The church will not experience the wrath of the Lamb, right? Let me ask you this question. Why would Jesus beat up his bride? If we're the bride of Christ, we're the church, we're the bride of Christ, why would Jesus beat us up? Because what is the tribulation? The tribulation is the wrath of the Lamb, his wrath being poured out upon this earth. Why would he beat up his bride? Okay, it doesn't make any sense. Jesus will come back and deliver believers from the wrath that is to come. So he's coming back to get us before the wrath comes. And then Jesus told his disciples in the Olivet Discourse to pray for deliverance from the tribulation, to pray for deliverance from the tribulation. So the fact is that we don't have to worry about the tribulation because we're not going to be here. And again, God wrote these things in the Bible, and we should know them. That's why I'm teaching them, because we need to know these things. He didn't put them in there to scare us, but he put them in there to prepare us. All right. So let me, for about 5 minutes, let me get a little deep, right? So, you know, put on your Bible hats, and we'll get a little deep. So when we think about these seven seals and seven trumpets and seven bowls that we're going to be studying here, how will they come? How will these things come? So I've put them, you know, again, you should have this in your notes, that some people believe they will come in succession, right? You got the first seal. You see up there on the left side, I got that seal, right? The scroll that was sealed. You got the first, the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth seal, right? And they'll come in that order. And then the seventh seal is made up of seven trumpets, right? So whereas the first six seals, the first seal was the rider on the white horse, the second seal, the rider on the black horse, the red horse, the third seal, the rider on the black horse, the fourth seal, the rider on the pale horse, the fifth seal, the sixth seal, that they all had things that came out of them. But now the seventh seal, out of the seventh seal comes seven trumpets. And so a lot of people think that, well, that's the order that they're going to come in. And then when you get to the end of the seven trumpets, you have the seventh trumpet, which is seven bowl judgments. So this is what's called the succession theory, as far as these trumpets, these seals and trumpets and bowls are concerned. The next one that you see is a divine judgment theory. And this one basically says that they don't come in any order at all, that they all just represent God's judgment, right? So there's no order. There's not seven seals and then seven trumpets and then seven bowls. They don't come in any kind of order, but they all represent God's judgment. So at any point, he can be unleashing a seal. He can be unleashing a trumpet. He can be unleashing a bowl. That, you know, it all works together, and it all is a part of God's divine judgment. All right. So that would be another viewpoint as to these seals and these trumpets and these bowls. Then there is the peace theory. You remember last week, we talked about the Antichrist is the first seal, and that when he comes, what's he going to do? He's going to bring peace, right? So for the first 3.5 years, according to this theory, there's going to be peace on the earth. The Antichrist, if you remember, he comes riding on a white horse, which symbolizes conquering. He has a bow, but no arrow. That means he's going to conquer without warfare. And so he will conquer peacefully the first 3.5 years. And then in the middle of the 3.5 years, he's going to break the covenant with the Jewish people. And then after that, all hell was going to break loose on the earth. So the first 3.5 years of the tribulation will be peaceful. At the middle of the tribulation, then that's when all the wrath of God is going to be poured out, the second 3.5 years. This is what they say Jesus talked about, the great tribulation. People will be martyred, you know, war, famine, pestilence, martyrdom, all these things, you know, the judgments, drying up of the sea, you know, the moon turning to blood. That's all this stuff is going to happen during the second half of the tribulation. So this one, again, it says that the first 3.5 years will be a time of peace. And then the second 3.5 will be the time of great tribulation. And then there's a third theory, which basically says, again, the first 3.5 years, we see the four seals being opened. You know, the first seal, the Antichrist, the second seal, third, fourth, riders on the horses. And then the second 3.5 years will be that time of great tribulation. All right, it'll be a time of great tribulation. So this one, how this differs from the one before it, this one is not necessarily saying that the first 3.5 years are going to be all peaceful. You know, it's saying that, you know, the Antichrist will come, but, you know, there will also be a famine and pestilence and war and death, you know, happening during that first 3.5 years. But then it's going to pick up the second 3.5 years where we see the great tribulation. Okay, I know we got a little deep there, but I think it's important. See, because we're going to be going through these seals and these trumpets and these bowls. And, you know, we want to have some kind of reference point as to when these things take place and when they happen. So, you know, again, I know I keep saying this, but you have the notes. I put this in the notes, so if you want to read through it and you have questions, you know, feel free in the upcoming lessons to ask any questions that you might have from reading the notes. All right, let me stop there and see if we have any feedback.
Okay. Questions.
For joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, The Tribulation, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request The Tribulation. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request The Tribulation from our Bible Prophecy series. Or call us at 877-831-5060. Keep in mind, the entire series on Bible Prophecy is made available by request.
When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. Dr. Glaze is the author of 10 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now for Dr. Glaze and our volunteer staff, I'm Sonia Hall reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.